Hello, .NET readers, listeners, and members. My name is John Moore, and this is the ProWrestling.net audio review for Ultima Lucha Trace, Part Trace, the Lucha Underground episode that aired October 11th, 2017 on El Rey Network. As I mentioned, this was Ultima Lucha Trace, Part 3 in English. And after the commercial break for non-members, I will be going over my full audio review for the Lucha Underground show that featured a Gift of the Gods ladder match between Son of Havoc and Pentagon Dark. Now I'm back from the break, and for some initial thoughts on the show, this was a fun Lucha Underground episode. Top to bottom, one of the funnest episodes I've seen in a while. I've noted that there was a recent fun episode between, it was the match between Joey Ryan and Ricky Reyes. And that had a fun match. But if I remember correctly, there was some famous BS at the beginning. Because a lot of the latter part of this season, for some reason, include a lot of weird famous B dumb finishes, including Brenda and El Tejano Jr. But this had no El Tejano Jr., cheap match finish. It was just fun top to bottom. What I was afraid of, given the last 2 weeks of Lucha Underground episodes, was you would have the matches on this show try to top those episodes, because those last couple episodes had gratuitous amounts of blood and violence, where in the Dante Fox versus Killshot one, it worked. Because that feud was built up big enough that justified the violence and stuff. But as I noted in the last 2 weeks, I was afraid of Law of Diminishing Returns. We got to one of the matches that I attended at the show. The match I attended at this taping was the Summon Havoc. I didn't get to see that one. I attended the Trios Championship match. Again, with minimal storyline build, but it did inherit the Dante Fox versus Killshot storyline, so there's that. But top to bottom on the show, we just got a lot of fun matches, and they didn't try to overdo the last 2 days. There was some blood because Lucha Underground and blading is normal, I guess, but like I said, there wasn't no horrendous amounts of Crimson Mask. They utilized their time well. I talked about how good it was Katrina versus Ivelisse match was because of the hard work both women put in. The downside for that match was the lack of storyline development and effort put in by the writers. There was some lack of writer input here too, but the work rate overcame that. It's amazing that they have such a good roster under them that they were able to overcome, not even, you know, just undermining writing, because the writing did not undermine them. Of course, the writers are really good of the show when they're focused on storylines. The downside was just the lack of storyline focus and throwing wrestlers out there just because. But, as I said, the wrestlers are good enough, and we got some good matches tonight. I'm not going to sit around in the intro praising how good these matches are without telling you what matches were so good. This was, as I mentioned, this is the penultimate episode of the season, maybe of the series, based on the lack of news we're really hearing from El Rey Network. I assume the problem is, the thing holding it up, is they're looking for funding for the tapings. And as I mentioned on .NET Weekly, if you're a member, of course this is going out to non-members too, we've been getting a lot of press releases from El Rey Network that show, and also what we've been hearing from within the industry is they're taking steps and they're actually doing everything that you think a company would do. Assuming that they were greenlit, the only thing holding them back is they don't have any taping dates. And what I only assume is they don't have any funding for those taping dates. That's the only thing holding him up, it seems, because they're doing so many other things business-wise and production-wise behind the scenes. And they're treating it as if the season is greenlit. Like I said, the only downside is there's no funding. And I don't know if there's no funding. That's just a huge assumption. But it's a very educated one based off of everything we're hearing from El Rey and the such. But if you would like to follow along with my Rin review, so as I said, this is season 3, episode 39, the second to last episode of Lucha Underground, maybe ever, or maybe for this season. Who knows? Because they're writing, as you probably notice, they're not assuming that this is the last season like they did in season 1, where they wrote themselves out for both possible outcomes. They're surely writing for another season. And there we go. If you would like to follow along, you can check out my written review, which is posted on the ProWrestling.net main site. And without further ado, let's get into the audio review. This was Lucha Underground on El Rey Network. It was taped June 25th and 26th. We had some matches from both days in Los Angeles, California, at The Temple in downtown LA, Boyle Heights. This week's intro teaser, it focused on the first two parts of Ultima Lucha Trace, as it would. Because that last episode set up for this week's episode. Like I mentioned, the match was booked 1 week rather as opposed to the whole season or the whole year. It was Willie Mack won a unique opportunity. It was a Trios Championship match, and he inherited, as I mentioned, Dante Fox and Killshot, who are banged up. Seriously banged up, and I'll go into the violent, gruesome details. It's not safe for work. It's kind of not safe for work if you saw it. But check it out then if you are into body meat. But also, they were showing the build to the Sexy Star versus Taya Valkyrie feud, which has been built pretty decent. It could have been built better. There was some weird arachnophobia storyline that I'm glad they dropped with Sexy Star. Not sure why they ran a arachnophobia storyline out of nowhere. The gist of this feud was Sexy Star was screwed over by Johnny Mundo Impact Morrison and his Worldwide Underground, and Taya is the Melina of the group. It led to this match. This episode was Ultima Lucha Trace Part 3. Matt Stryker and Vampiro checked in on commentary. El Mariachi, El Bronx were the house band. Stryker did as he's been doing the last couple of episodes and just hyped up the upcoming matches. And we were taken right to a match. It was Taya Valkyrie versus Sexy Star in a Last Luchadora standing match. And the winner of this match was Sexy Star, of course. As she defeated Taya Valkyrie in a Last Luchadora standing match in 9 minutes and 9 seconds. And unlike the women's match from last week, this match got 3 minutes more of time. They didn't try to overdo anything. As I mentioned in last week's women match, there was blood, but the blood seemed rushed. I mean, it's a little more realistic when you bleed early, but at the same time, they weren't allowed to really tell a story in last week's women's match. Remember, they had booked this match a year out, and because Ivelisse got hurt, I'm talking about the Ivelisse versus Katrina match, they just brought it out. Oh, we booked this match out of nowhere. Katrina has been feuding. In a feud with Jeremiah Crane and Mil Muertes, that's where all the storyline has been building towards. And all of a sudden, they're just supposed to have a match because they booked it. So at least they were paying attention to their continuity. If this were like WWE or TNA, sometimes they would just act like the booking never happened. So thumbs up there. But they were only given 6 minutes. It screamed like they were cut for time, despite the hard work that Ivelisse and Katrina put in, especially Katrina, who we rarely see wrestle these days. But Sexy Star and Taya put in a lot of effort here, and you could really see the effort. What I would like to tell you as a probably reader or listener is try to extricate the problem Sexy Star has been having the last couple months with the whole Triple Mania and Rosemary incident. Because in the Lucha Underground universe and the real life universe behind the kayfabe universe of Lucha Underground, Sexy Star has put on 2 seasons worth of very strong work. I've gone on record in saying in season one that her matches were terrible, but she put turned those around. She adjusted to the United States style of wrestling, the more story based style, as opposed to high spots that aren't even that good. But Sexy Star has done well the last 2 seasons, and Taya Valkyrie is she has the athleticism to do athletic wrestling moves, but where her bread and butter is in brawling, and she is a trooper, a real this hard-nosed brawler, and this was a brawl, a fun brawl all around the arena. Taya did blade at one point, and in fact, the blood wasn't the story here. What the story was they were just laying in slaps, forearms, kicks, shots. That's where the story, and there was some no selling, but there was some great selling. I don't want to overblow how good this match was, because it wasn't like your huge match of the year candidate. It wasn't, say, up at the level of Sexy Star versus Mariposa, aka cheerleader Melissa Raisha Sheed from TNA. But yeah, this was just a fun, hardly worked, and a lot, everything just made sense. Sexy Star put in a good job here. Taya Valkyrie, this has me looking forward to Taya Valkyrie on Thursday nights and seeing what she can do with other strong brawlers, like hopefully a Gail Kim, if they could get a Gail Kim Taya Valkyrie match in there before the year's up, because Gail Kim is retiring. If they can get a Rosemary versus Taya Valkyrie, which I think they're building to at Bound for Glory in a month or so, and even Taya versus Taryn Terrell. Taryn Terrell's not known as the most athletic wrestler in the world, but she puts in a lot of hard work as far as brawling is concerned. In fact, Sexy Star reminds me of Taryn Terrell by her immense just growth as a pro wrestler. To the point where she is now, where she can have good matches with anyone, in the fact that she's not being carried. She's the one leading the match at times. So, good effort between both women. This is one of the better women's matches in the last this the last qu this quarter of the year. And it wasn't over, they didn't try to overdo anything. It was simply just fun, and you applauded both women for the hard work they put in. They had a good camera shot of Matt Stryker, so when you had Sexy Star coming up for they had thrown the finish was they both threw themselves through a table. They were fighting on a balcony area and they both fell through to tables, and Sexy Star barely beat the count and then knocked herself out because she was like adrenaline that was getting her up just to get the victory. And Matt Stryker's facial reaction there was priceless in a good way, where he was just astonished and happy that Sexy Star put in so much effort. It seemed natural. Something that's sometimes Stryker doesn't do well too often, but he was very natural here, and his facial reaction and reaction to the situation of Sexy Star knocking out in front of him enhanced the ending of the match. So good job by everyone. So even Matt Stryker, of all people, gets a thumbs up for this match too. Random dark match note. This was so the next match was taped before Matt Stryker's birthday, as I noted on .NET Weekly, and they ran some little Matt Stryker birthday party celebration. So happy a year in a so belated birthday to Matt Stryker, because his birthday was taped, I believe, on the day that the last episode was taped. So. Is that an omen? I don't know. I don't know what kind of omen Matt Stryker is. But he's been a good commentator this year, so there's that. And one of the better commentators in pro wrestling in general, because of the enthusiasm he exudes. And Vampiro is natural in both good and bad way, where he's weird sometimes, but that weirdness is a little bit more charming, say, than a Booker T, who seems to go all over the place, where Vampiro stays on track pretty for the most part. I would like to take a little break, and as I've been talking about, I was mentioning, what is this .NET Weekly show you're talking about? Well, you could find that out. I'll tell you what it's about right now. But you can listen to the .NET Weekly show as a .NET member. So, for the low price of $7.50 a month, you can become a ad-free member to the .NET site. You are listening to these free previews every once in a while. Note that I had every single episode of Lucha Underground Season 3 recorded. Audioly, for, is audioly a word? But yes, I had it recorded audioly for the entire Season 3. Will Pruitt, another .NET staffer, has you covered for Season 1 and Season 2. So, we have you covered every single week, every day of the week, with audio reviews of every pro wrestling show from Raw, SmackDown, Lucha Underground, NXT, 205 Live of all shows, GFW Impact, TNA Sling Show. We have ROH audio reviews, and when we are up and active, we do have Progress Wrestling reviews. Hating Gleed's been taking a little break on those because real life gets in the way. This is our kayfabe pro wrestling journalist lives, and real life gets priority. But we have all the shows covered for you. We have every major pro wrestling pay-per-view covered, from ROH pay-per-views, TNA pay-per-views. Don't happen too often, but we do have you covered there on audio, and WWE pay-per-views, which happen every 2 weeks. That's a little bit of overload, but we got you. And we don't go for the whole quantity over quality approach. You get half an hour to an hour to even maybe sometimes up to 2 hours worth of analysis and educated discussion on pro wrestling from different angles. We don't try to take things from a biased perspective. The reason we sometimes have multiple hosts on is to get different viewpoints and to take into account opposing and favoring viewpoints if applicable. Also, as a member, you get access to our .NET forum, you get no ads on the main site, and a lots more. A thing I would like to plug, if it's still available, is Jason Powell recently was on the Ross Report, the Jim Ross podcast this past week. You can type in the Ross Report, and I won't give away the code. I actually don't remember what the code was. That's why I'm not giving it away. But I know it rhymes with Slobberknocker somehow. But he was on the show and he offered a coupon code. So if you want your first month of .NET membership even cheaper, instead of $7.50, you can get it down to $2 if you sign up within, I don't know, it might be over by now, but it could also maybe be over next week. But you could sign up there. Also, note that we give you more discounts if you sign up for a year. We take $2 off your entire years of .NET membership per month to bring it down to an average of $5.50 a month. And if you combine that with the Jim Ross discount, you could get it down to somewhere about four something a month. So check us up on that offer. Try us out for a month. If you like pro wrestling audio, and you're listening to this probably because you are interested in pro wrestling audio, especially Lucha Underground audio, where we have you covered for our seasons 1 through 3. We have an archive site. That's another benefit of .NET membership. You get to see what we were talking about years ago, within the last 10 or so years. So I'll leave you with that. If I continue to talk more about .NET membership, I will just keep going on. I mentioned, oh, I forgot to mention what .NET Weekly was. It is our flagship podcast. It's where we go over all the news of the week, and it's hosted by Jason Powell, the head of the site, and a co-host. I was the co-host this past week, but in past weeks, it could be one of us .NET staffers, Will Pruitt, Jake Barnett, Hayden Gleed, Zach Zimmerman, and Darren Goodrich when they have time. Sometimes, most of the time, in fact, it's a random name in the pro wrestling industry. It could be a Jim Ross. It could be a Disco Inferno. We had even a Survivor star, Johnny Fairplay, arrive on the show. We have former WWE writers, other pro wrestling journalists, anyone who is anyone who wants to talk about pro wrestling shows up on the .NET Weekly show. So I'll also recommend that to you. Also, another thing I would like to plug is the Will Pruitt Show. You don't have to be a member most weeks to hear this one. Is Will Pruitt and Jake Barnett host a show they call the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. It's not as pretentious as they say. It's a very good discussion on isolated topics. The pretentious name is just the name of the show. So if pretentiousness drives you away, know that it's not too pretentious. It's just the name of the show. I'll leave you with that. And check us out for a month. If you don't like it, you can always cancel, especially with a deal out right now. So try us out. Trust me, you'll like it. And make sure to check out membership at prowrestling.net. Now back to the Lucha Underground Ultima Lucha audio review. The next match of the night was the random trios match that was set up last week. It was Drago, Vibora, and Pindar. Vibora in the temple is known as the Luchasaurus because he has this weird. It's some Lucha Underground masks are cool. His mask is kind of cool, but some of them reach cool to goofy levels. El Dragon Azteca does not have cool gear. His is just goofy in a bad way. But Vibora, they call the Luchasaurus because he looks like a dinosaur. And they face. So it's the Reptile Tribe. Cobra Moon was there. She's their leader. Versus Willie Mack, Dante Fox, and Killshot for the Lucha Underground Trios Championship. The setup to this match was Willie Mack won a battle royal that he won in 3 minutes. It was against the entire Lucha Underground undercard. So it wasn't that hard. But Willie Mack was the most deserving of the Lucha Underground undercard because he shouldn't be in the undercard. He had a good main event push, a good storyline with Sexy Star as her best friend, and they kind of forgot about him. That's what Lucha Underground does these days. When they try to introduce too many new characters, they forget about some of their very strong, very talented, and very well-developed characters that they've put some effort into, and then just at a snap of finger, discard. But he won a match and got put in this random trios match. The whole Reptile Tribe thing also like combine this. So take what we did with Willie Mack and combine it with three people. Drago, extremely talented. He's one of their best in-ring workers. When I talk about their just top overall wrestlers, I would bring up probably Phoenix, Drago, and King Cuerno. King Cuerno, another guy who's gone MIA despite being in the trailer for season 3, in his cool cowboy uniform. And you get to see him on Thursdays as El Hijo del Fantasma, who sucks. El Hijo del Fantasma is not good. He's a weird character. King Cuerno is weird at that. But the Reptile Tribe, they were building up a storyline between the Reptile Tribe against Phoenix, Errol Starr, and Drago, and no, yeah, okay, and there was no Drago because Drago heel turned, and it was a good heel turn. The temple was really into Drago turning because they beat up their fan favorite Phoenix, and for some reason they decided to put Phoenix in this random lovey-dovey this soap opera storyline with Melissa Santos. That was totally unnecessary. They did not have to turn Melissa Santos into a wrestler slash, as I mentioned, deuteragonist in a storyline. She's one of the best ring announcers in pro wrestling. Why it as some people have complained about bringing Renee Young into storylines in WWE's end, and luckily WWE figured that out and pulled back on it. Yet Lucha Underground couldn't have seen that it was totally unnecessary to put Melissa Santos as a active wrestler. Even though she's trained, she was fine in the ring when they utilized her, but it's just unnecessary. And they discarded a good feud. I would eventually have thought that that feud would end up with Aerostar and Phoenix probably finding a third wrestler to counter the Reptile Tribe. But, and maybe finding a babyface King Cuerno, finding a Daga. Daga had a sword in the trailer, and we still haven't seen Daga with a sword. I wonder if that's one of the storylines that got dummied out. But anyway, it was a lot of wasted opportunities here. So I mentioned in my thoughts for this match, which you hear me this complaining a lot about this match. This match was really good. It's a trios match. Something and the trios division has gone a bit by the wayside in Lucha Underground due to mostly because of Team Havoc, who held the belts for the longest time. They had injuries, and because of that, I guess the writers decided they shouldn't write for the trios division anymore. Which is a shame because they had something decent going on with Drago and the Reptile Tribe against Phoenix and Aerostar. Aerostar, another guy who's just gone by the wayside. They could have got Masquerita Sagrada, even Pimpinella Escarlata, even a sexy star if they weren't going to utilize him, even Willie Mack. But no more complaining that it's something that a problem that they had, both in season one and season two. The difference with season two and season three, sorry, season two and season three. The difference between season two and three, though, is at least three has good continuity and good writing, whereas two was the ending part was just so random to the point where it was just kind of sickening. The thing that's annoying now is that they forgot about some of their storylines and just had it fizzle away. And a shame because the Reptile Tribe lost here. Pindar, in particular, has looked good in his matches, but we're not going to really get a chance to see much of him, probably. Because they ended up losing. They'll probably get a rematch if a season four happens. Not that I'm really looking forward to it, because they should have established Drago, Vibor, Pindar, and Cobra Moon as a dominant heel faction. It's kind of like what I initially had my criticisms of with Sanity in NXT, Alexander Wolf, Eric Young, and Killian Dane early in the year, where the point they had to reboot them because they didn't they. It, Establish them as scrubs, and Drago, Vibora, and Pindar are kind of scrubs here. But there's always positives, and the positive was this match was really fun. It was fun as hell. The thing that really strengthened it was the one component of the match that had storyline development, and that was Dante Fox and Killshot. So the storyline was they were set up as a reluctant tag team. This is nothing new in pro wrestling. You see this in pro wrestling all the time, where the heel general manager will put two guys who hate each other as a tag team, and then they become of this an odd couple, and eventually become a strong tag team down the road. You've seen it with the Rock and Sock Connection. You've seen it with a lot of Kane's tag teams, like Team Hell No, the Hurricane, RVD and Kane, Goldust and Booker T, odd couple tag teams. Who you wouldn't expect to tag team with that eventually become a solid tag team. And that's what we saw here. And what added to the match, here's what was the one nasty spot. So you had, throughout the match, you had Dante Fox wearing a Lucha Underground t-shirt, of all things. So, yeah, he wore a Lucha Underground t-shirt to the ring. But the t-shirt fell off. And revealing this nasty back scars, and it wasn't even just back scars. He had back holes. They did a zoom in of his back after one of the flip dives to the outside, and it was this nasty. He's a dark-skinned dude, but his back was like meaty red. You didn't even have skin. You had epidermis ripped off. It was nasty. So proving that they decided to go with real glass in the Dante Fox versus Killshot match, which I would complain, and this was me. I was quoting Darren Gudridge's thoughts on Killshot Shane Strickland as well. Both of Killshot and Dante Fox are CCW garbage type wrestlers, but they are so talented. They're so smooth and moving through the air, and even on their grounded offense, they're so just really good at that. That isn't necessary to mutilate yourselves and rip apart your bodies for the sake of a limited small audience. Not my cup of tea. But to give them credit, they did go through a lot of hell. It was called the Hell of War match, by the way. But it didn't have to be too violent. It could have been fun like this match. Everything in this match was fun. You had Drago. You had the Luchasaurus. People like chanting the Luchasaurus. Pindar, while not the most high-flying of all the luchadors, he's a very solid, grounded wrestler. Like I said, in the limited amount of action we saw Pindar in, he has looked really good. His costume's kind of goofy too. I'm not sure what he is. I think he might be a turtle, but he or some sort of lizard. But it was a fun match overall. And Willie Mack, his strength is just the good amounts of energy he puts in. He every single match, and he doesn't overdo it too. He's just Mr. Intensity. Think like a Daniel Bryan or a Travis Banks type, where they're just this 0 to 100 every single time throughout the. And it was a really good story that they were telling between him and Johnny Mundo, where Johnny Mundo questioned his conditioning, even though he shouldn't have. The only reason Mundo questioned Willie Mack's conditioning is because Willie Mack doesn't have the body type of a bodybuilder. He looks like a normal dude, but a lot of that, what looks like fat, is actually muscle because he moves like a luchador. He moves smoothly throughout the air. He can be comparable to a Shane Strickland, for example. Dante Fox is at another level because he does some weird twists and turns in the air, but he can match some of the this and Killshot himself. Shane Strickland can do some good twists and turns in the air, and Willie Mack can do the same. So a good fun match. Three fun guys, four, and as I mentioned, four guys who deserved a lot better through the storyline writing. But the crowd chanted after the match. So it was Willie Mack, Killshot, and Dante Fox defeating the Reptile Tribe via pinfall in 7 minutes and 58 seconds to become the new Lucha Underground Trios champions. After the match, the crowd chanted, "You deserve it," to Willie Mack. And I totally agree. Mack deserves it for all the hard work he put in the whole year and not getting much in return. This was a good consolation prize, if you will. But check it out. It was fun. As I said, check out the women's match before. That was fun. The next match is going to be fun. Let's see. So we didn't get a storyline cinematic in this episode, which is fine. We got one at the end of the show. Spoiler alert, post credits, like Marvel movies. We had Matt Stryker after the match running through the rest of the Ultima Lucha matches. It was El Dragon Azteca Jr. I'm talking about like next week's, the season finale. El Dragon Azteca Jr. versus Matanza Cueto in a cage match. Speaking of cages, we have Brian Cage versus Mil Muertes versus Jeremiah Crane for the magic glove that blows up heads. Really, they have this. It's their new mid-card championship. It's a magic glove that blows up heads. Blew up Casimiro Delgado's head, who was played by Lorenzo Lamas. And the main event of next week's show is Prince Puma, Ricochet. We've been all counting down of this for the entire pro wrestling industry because, as it has been well known, this is probably Ricochet's last match, aka Prince Puma. He would be facing Johnny Mundo in a career versus title match. If Ricochet slash Prince Puma loses, his career is over in Lucha Underground. Now, let me tell you this. You would think that, like I said, there's a reason I mentioned that this might have given away the finish to the Johnny Mundo versus Prince Puma match. And I'll say, and I'm not going to spoil any things, so I'm just going to be vague. But trust me, you'll note that with this vague statement, it will make a lot of sense next week. Don't think of, with Prince Puma presumably leaving, that The finish is exactly like you might think it is. It might be a little bit different, and they might have found a creative way to get there. They also might have gone and taped another match without me knowing, but I was there. I know how this match ends. And it's probably not the way that you would have thought it would have ended. But I thought they found a really creative way to meet your expectations to as to what this match is going to be. I'll leave it at that because I'm not going to spoil the match for you. But note that the finish is going to be intriguing and not exactly what you think it was. It might be somewhat what you think it was, but not exactly. So, the main event match of the show was Son of Havoc versus Pentagon Dark in a ladder match for the Gift of the Gods Championship. And this was another fun match. Not overdone. We didn't get bleeding. See, you don't need to bleed all the time. And we got chair shots, but they were protected chair shots. And a lot of good pantomiming by Pentagon Dark and Son of Havoc. These Pentagon Dark is someone that they also dropped the ball on. Yeah, to be honest, like he's not even feuding with anybody. He was kind of thrown in this match randomly after being thrown in the Gift of the Gods picture randomly. He ha was dealing. The way he got in was through that garbage, Famous B and El Tejano Jr. situation. But this was Pentagon Dark defeating Son of Havoc in a ladder match to become the new Gift of the Gods champion. Just very fun throughout. You had them putting together ladder contraptions. They were throwing piles. So there's this like piles of ladders and piles of chairs. There were some tables. This was a TLC match in this the simplest form. But to give both men credit, it wasn't the most dangerous TLC match in the world. Sometimes when you see overdone violence and possible concussion threats in a match, as a viewer and as a live audience viewer, you kind of get sick of it, and it makes you not want to watch pro wrestling next week or down the road. But this was very similar to almost the first match, but done a little bit more hardcore. And like I said, not in a turn-off type of way. It was just fun. The three matches of the show were pure fun, and this was just simply fun. Son of Havoc. It's good to see him taken a bit more seriously, because that's what they should have been naturally building up to. Son of Havoc and Pentagon Jr. are two of the most. So if you wanted to rank this the top three wrestlers as far as popularity is concerned in the Temple, I would probably start with Pentagon Jr., Pentagon Dark, then Phoenix, and then Son of Havoc. The reason why I say Pentagon Dark, people love him because he's more of a edgy babyface slash heel. He's a babyface. People like Phoenix because he's the stalwart white meat babyface that everyone likes to see rise from the ashes. No pun intended. And Son of Havoc was the guy who started off as a heel jobber. He's their Heath Slater, but maybe less Heath Slater and more Zack Ryder, where they want to see this guy succeed, and he has the chops to succeed. This unlike WWE with the whole Zack Ryder huge momentum push. Instead of calming him down, they have utilized some of Havoc somewhat well. Also, another reason why Son of Havoc hasn't been utilized to the best of his potential is because he was stuck with the Angelico and Ivelisse injuries that, through no fault of his own, caused him to be pushed at the wayside. It's your whole tag team partner gets injured and you are kind of set for disaster afterwards. But this was a fun match. I can't recommend it any more than saying this was just simply fun. There was one weird spot, and I'm glad Matt Stryker and Vampiro pointed it out. Just it's good when the announcers aren't insulting your intelligence and trying to cover up bad logic holes. So where Pentagon Jr. could have quickly climbed up and picked up the what you would call it, Gift of the Gods. But instead, he decides to take almost like 2 minutes setting up this ladder structure for a spot that wasn't even that huge. It was the spot that led to the finish of the match, but Son of Havoc was knocked out so much that he could have just climbed up the ladder and Son of Havoc wouldn't have logically gotten up. But Matt Stryker did cover for it by pointing out that this was a flaw in the thinking of Pentagon Jr., who was getting a little bit too greedy. Vampiro and Matt Stryker, good for covering that. It's something I give Joss Matthews a little bit of credit for in Impact Wrestling and Mauro Ranallo in NXT. They are really good at covering for logic holes that sometimes get the miscues that the pro wrestlers do in the matches that make you scratch your head a little bit. So, good just lyrics to the song known as The Match there, to use a JR analogy. But it was a fun match. I said 14 minutes. Pentagon Dark wins. He's the new Gift of the Gods champion. That's their money in the bank. And Matt Stryker made sure to clarify that the way that their money in the bank works a little differently is because Dario Cueto's a promoter, and he's been a bit of a shoddy promoter these days without building up his matches. That's why. So the way that the Gift of the Gods works is you can cash in for a title shot of your choosing, most likely the Lucha Underground Championship. Except you have to give Dario Cueto a week's notice because he's a promoter and he has to build up matches, even though he hasn't been doing that a lot recently. Talk about the kayfabe and the non-kayfabe sense. That's the Gift of the Gods rules. Is there money in the bank? I thought it was cool, and that's another thing that's gone by the wayside that they just wiped some of the dust off and unearthed recently, because they introduced a new mid-card title known as the Exploding Head Glove, that I still think has the spirit of MVP in it. But that was it with the Lucha Underground. The credits rolled, but wait, there's more. There's a post-credit cinematic, because Lucha Underground is good with post-credit cinematics. We haven't had a lot of good ones recently. This was a solid cliffhanger. So you had Prince Puma in Vampiro's creepy. Will Pruitt called it a sex dungeon once. It kind of was a sex dungeon because he used to like r do some BDSM rope exercises to Pentagon Jr. every week. It was weird for some reason in season two. It's less of a sex dungeon now and more of just a creepy candle cult dungeon. Maybe it's R. Kelly's cult dungeon. I'm kidding. I shouldn't make R. Kelly jokes. So Zombie Vampiro shows up. I have no clue why Vampiro is suddenly a zombie clown. He talked about the circle being complete. So we're quoting Star Wars now. And it was time to go. And Prince Puma said, yes, it was time. And he left. Vampiro then he who was wearing a martial arts gi. I'm assuming this was a time skip after Lucha Underground because he was just wearing a regular t-shirt before and he was non-zombie. He spoke to like some sort of spirit who was talking to him, and Vampiro rose his head and said, "Thank you, master." So ooh, there's a higher power. Yeah, we've had a couple of those storylines. It's a little bit late to be doing this storyline. I think they maybe should have done this, and they could have shown this cinematic, let's see, 4 weeks ago. And there's another thing where they dropped the ball: the whole Prince Puma versus Johnny Mundo feud. There was no build to that at all. They just had one encounter. Prince Puma said, "I will put my career on the line for no reason," which now gives you, like I said, it makes you assume how the match is going to end. Like I said, it's not going to end exactly how you think it's going to end. But that said, there was no storyline development. It's just going to be a swerve. If they go a contrast to your expectation, it's just going to be a swerve. It's not going to be anything really clever. There's where they dropped the ball. Prince Puma versus Johnny Impact, Morrison, Mundo. It should be a good match. I'm safe for saying that it will be a good match, to my recollection. This happened over a year ago. It might have sucked because it was good by comparison, but we had like overload of high work rate matches in season three or so. But it was good. Make sure to check out next week's episode. I will be back next week with all the audios that I do. And one more plug: make sure to check out .NET membership. If you like audio, you wouldn't be disappointed. Next week's episode most likely will be on the member side. And as I mentioned, if you go to listen to Jason Powell's appearance on the Ross Report soon, there is a coupon code that gets you a huge discount on your first month of .NET membership. So, and you could also take that coupon and spread it amongst, we have 6 month options and a year option, which will give you a discount in turn. So you could combine both discounts. Discounts are nice, but even without the discount, the amount of content that we give you on a daily basis, the amount of quality content that we give you is totally worth it. And with that, I'll leave you ado. And there you go. Thank you so much for being .NET members, readers, and listeners. I'll leave you with that. Have a nice one.